Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
For 5 hours yesterday, I was a Pulitzer Prize winner. And let me tell you, it was beautiful. Top of the world, nah. I had finally made it. Oh, yeah, sure. I know my brother's a doctor. But me, Tony Katz, radio host, Pulitzer Prize winner. Well, Tony, it wasn't really a Pulitzer Prize. It was a special citation. You shut your mouth. Pulitzer Prize is what it says. And I'm putting it on the bio. And I did. I put it on the Twitter bio. I said I was honored and I was humbled. Then I realized it wasn't to be. I'm going to share with you my 5 hours as a Pulitzer Prize winner. What happened, why it happened, how it changed, and what it means. When I am done with this story, you are going to say, I never need another ounce of proof of what journalism has become or why it doesn't matter that you report the news. It only matters that you report the right news. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. 833-468-8669. 833-GOT-TONY. That's the number. That's how you get to be a part of the show. It was a tweet, as are many things. Pulitzer Prize on X, at Pulitzer Prizes, is sending out, hey, here's who's won the Pulitzer. The Pulitzer is for journalism and for there's music, there's series of categories. And then this comes out. Journalists and media workers covering the war in Gaza have received a 2024 Pulitzer Prize special citation. Now, we all know that very often we see some of the most awful people winning awards. And you realize that the entirety of awards are nothing more than a way to insulate people who match up ideologically, utilizing the award to keep them from questions. It's like saying that, you know, Paul Krugman, Nobel Prize in economics. Paul Krugman doesn't know what he's talking about. Paul Krugman said the internet would have no greater impact on American life or life in general than the fax machine. You want me to listen to Paul Krugman? That's not going to happen. That's insane. But the award is given as a way of providing cover. If Yasser Arafat can get a Nobel Peace Prize, well then, holy hell, sign me up. I can get a Nobel Peace Prize, and I never once tried to kill any Jews. I did once get angry at my father. That's a completely different subject. Here's this tweet. Staring at it right now, I took a screenshot. Journalists and media workers covering the war in Gaza have been awarded a 2024 Pulitzer Prize special citation. I cover the war in Gaza. I work in media. I was in Israel. I was at the kibbutzim. The kibbutzes that were destroyed by Hamas, where people were killed and gunned down and women were raped, that were burned out and destroyed and people were kidnapped. I was at the kibbutzes to the north, a mile, 1.3 miles from the Lebanese border. You could see the Lebanese border, where those people could not go back home on a daily basis because of the shelling that continues to this day. Over 80,000 refugees in Israel in their own country. I reported on it. I got myself a Pulitzer. How could I not? This is what it says. They mean me. Ladies and gentlemen, I am Tony Katz, Pulitzer Prize winner.
From Television City in Hollywood.
Good time. Anytime you need a payment. Good time.
Pulitzer, and you get a Pulitzer. And Michael, you don't have to be so militant. And I left the house, and I had posted it. I said, I'm deeply honored. And people are reaching out to me. Congratulations. What is this? Oh, my God. And I literally posted. I shouldn't say literally, because I literally did. I posted. You understand they gave this to everybody, right? If you tell me journalists and media workers covering the war in Gaza haven't gotten a special citation for the Pulitzer, that means if you put out a video or you had a tweet. Do we still call them tweets? You had a tweet where you're talking about it. Boom. Pulitzer. I thought it was ridiculous. The whole thing was nutty. This is like the cheapest thing possible. Why? I don't know why they would put it out. All I did was take advantage of it. I thought it was funny. People were reaching out like, oh my gosh. I'm like, you know, they gave this to everybody. Like, I had to explain it. I have it on X. You know, they gave this to everybody. I put it in my bio. And then someone says to me, you know, Tony, they didn't mean you. And I said, what do you mean they didn't mean me? I covered the war in Gaza. Journalists and media workers covering the war in Gaza. That's the headline. Here's what it reads. In recent years, the Pulitzer Board has issued citations honoring journalists covering wars in Ukraine and Afghanistan. This year, the board recognizes the courageous work of journalists and media workers covering the war in Gaza. Under horrific conditions, an extraordinary number of journalists have died in the effort to tell the stories of Palestinians and others in Gaza. This war has also claimed the lives of poets and writers among the casualties. As the Pulitzer Prizes honor categories of journalism, arts, and letters, we mark the loss of invaluable records of the human experience. Oh. So you had to be in Gaza. No, not necessarily in Gaza, but you had to be covering the stories of Palestinians. You see, I was covering the stories of Israelis who were murdered, Israelis who were abused, Israelis who were misplaced, who still can't go home. I specifically went to cover the story that quite literally nobody else was covering. And we should be clear, other radio hosts went before I did. And other radio hosts have been going for years to Israel. Other hosts and others in media certainly been talking about what happened in Israel. I am not the only one. I am not the first. I am not special. But it is why, indeed, I went. That doesn't get you a Pulitzer. Only covering the stories of the Palestinians gets you a Pulitzer. Oh, I get it. All the journalists are equal, but some are more equal than others. And only certain journalists, only certain media workers, your words, not mine, Pulitzer, only certain media workers can have a Pulitzer if you are covering the right stories. So I looked at that and I deleted a tweet and I took Pulitzer Prize winner out of my bio.
But this whole place sucks. That's right, it sucks.
I'm not a Pulitzer Prize winner because I covered the wrong story. Well, no, Tony, it's because you weren't in Gaza risking your life. No, it's because I covered the wrong story. It's because everybody and their mother wanted to tell a story about Palestinians while the Palestinians never once stated that Hamas is the enemy, although every now and then you do hear that story that Hamas is the problem, but we have a lot of people in the U.S. trying to keep that quiet. No, I talked about it the other way. That's not good enough. I talked about what's happening to Israelis. That's not enough. I talked about those who were raped and those people who watched their loved ones die in front of them. I talked about the woman who tried to drag her mother-in-law's body back into the house, but it was too heavy. And her father-in-law seeing his own wife dead on the porch in front of them, grabbed her and brought her into the safe house, where they then hid for 11 hours. The stories of mothers who were on the phone with their children for those 11 hours until help came, hiding in safe rooms, playing dead. Nope. That's not going to get you a Pulitzer, Cats. Not at all. In order to get a Pulitzer, it's not that you report. It's that you report the right things. In order to get a Pulitzer, it's not that you share the story. It's that you share the right story. Okay. Okay, it's not a Pulitzer for Tony. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? I don't get a Pulitzer. What I am going to do is keep talking about the things that I think are important awards or not. I think you should do the same. But let this be the final lesson anyone ever needs. That no, journalists do not view journalism the way they should. Those who are giving the awards give the awards not based on the skill set, not based on the story, but whether or not the story matches the narrative it need. And we see this in Hollywood, and we see this in a bunch of places. I have argued before that what we need are more awards, and we need more people creating groups to give out awards, because awards are credibility, and how can you say my award doesn't matter? Your award doesn't matter. Maybe none of the awards matter. The only thing that matters is being honest and being clear and engaging, having a take and being willing to accept the fact that you might be wrong. And recognizing that there are moments where we're not going to have two sides. There's the right and there's the wrong, the yetzer tov and the yetzer hara. There is good and there is evil, and good should win. I'll be fine without a Pulitzer. But a world that doesn't share the other side of the story, that world sucks. And that the Pulitzer people don't think that side should get recognition, that's a story in and of itself. I'm Tony Katz.
It's another, I think, issue of being, you know, things are going well, and then we totally overspent in terms of fiscally as well, in Bidenomics.
Bidenomics. If I was a professor, I'd give them an F.
Well, how do you really feel? Tony Katz today. 833-468-8669. 833 Got Tony, that is the number. That's Stanley Druckenmiller. He's made a couple of bucks in investing. He's made a few dollars. He's got, I believe, what businesses call, or what people call, coin is what he has. Yes, of course, Bidenomics is a failure. Meanwhile, the Dow is up 70. The NASDAQ is up 40. And Apple putting out the new iPad Pro in the iPad Air tablets. The Pro has the M4. The first new iPad model Apple's released since October of 2022. That's not something to write. Like, that's the big tagline. You mean it's been 2 years since there's been a new iPad model? The iPad Pro comes in an 11-inch and a 13-inch. It's a 5.1 millimeters thick. Oh, that is thin. That is a thin. Starts at $999 for the smaller one. The 13-inch starts at $1,300 with 256 gigs of storage. So that is a little bit more expensive. The Pro snaps into a new case, Apple calling it the Magic Keyboard. There will be no spelling mistakes. You'll never have spell check again. It's magic! And then it basically, it has a mouse pad as well. So it's like using a laptop. What is weird, and I don't know if this is generational, I'm not sure if this is generational. I, for a short while, had an iPad. When they first came out, of course, I got one because I'm that moron. And I got one, and I'm using it. And I'm like, wow, this sucks. It's a wholly uncomfortable feeling. I have to use a laptop. I cannot navigate. I cannot properly utilize the holding of it. The using of it is such a tedious task. A tedious task. But a laptop is no problem. So I only use laptops. I do not use iPads. And I do not know who uses iPads. Now, that doesn't mean that people don't use them, right? That's like a Pauline Kael thing. New York socialite in the 70s. She is the one who is people claim that she said Nixon when Richard Nixon won re-election. I don't know anybody who voted for Nixon. As if somehow that's what America is. You know, the Upper West Side in Manhattan is how you determine who's going to win an election. But on the regular, people who use iPads, and I assume that it's generational. It's one of the few places where I'm like, okay, I'm of an age that I clearly don't connect. Am I the only one who finds it like completely like unbearable? Phone, you agree, producer Jason? So I get, but I will admit that I used to have the Pro models, like the Pro Max, like the bigger screen. And then in this last one, I don't have the newest one. I have the one before that because honestly, I can't be the guy who keeps up that much. And I got the smaller screen. And at first I'm like, oh, what a mistake. It is so much more comfortable. It is so much more comfortable. I got to get one of those pop socket things to hold on to it better or whatever the holster is. But like, I don't need the phone to be that big, but I can use the phone without a problem. It's the iPad. The shape doesn't make any sense. The whole thing just falls apart. Meanwhile, Apple's like, we'll do more of these. The smaller iPad, which is the iPad Air, is $599 for 128 gigs of storage. If you want the larger one, it's $799. See, so I don't. What is the difference? What am I really getting between Pro and Air? Okay, you get a better camera. The iPad Pro has a 12-megapixel rear camera that can do 4K video. An iPad Pro comes with something called Final Cut Camera that can control multiple iPhone cameras. Oh, now we're cooking. So if I want to do live streaming and I don't want to have to deal with some kind of outside OBS or some kind of program to be able to bring in multiple cameras, I can now do it through the iPad? Okay. Now I get it. So now if you're in the streaming business, Apple has you buying their product and then utilizing people's iPhones as the camera. Oh, I might have to buy an iPad. I mean, we're building the new studio, and the studio is meant to do more video, and I'm already an Apple guy. I'm already sucked into that. I understand my soul has been taken. I see the issue. You don't have to remind me. Huh. This is interesting. Now, it just got interesting. Because for that, I could see it. Right? You're just like pressing which camera you're going to use at the time. And then it's recording. Is it recording to the cloud? Or is it actually storing? Because even with 256, video takes up a lot of space. But then you just move it over or you just put it in the cloud and that's it. All right, I'm going to look into this. Apple dropped the price of its entry-level iPad to $349, down from $429. So that's what they've announced thus far from Apple. I think it's interesting the prices went up because the price of everything goes up. When Apple announces they don't do manufacturing in China anymore, then I'll be really interested. This is Tony Katz Today. Find everything at TonyKatz.com.
So someone I know on X was saying that someone needs to stop the Kristi Noem interviews. And I responded with counter argument, we need more Kristi Noem interviews. Oh, yes, we certainly do. It's not every day you get to watch somebody burn it all down. She wants this. She wants to defend killing the dog. She wants to somehow... How did Kim Jong-un get into all of this? She's comparing her three-year-old to President Trump. Let it happen. Let it go. Let this all just play out as just the absolute madness that it is. And then when it's all out there, we can say in one clear voice,
bye, Felicia,
and be done with it. Tony Katz today. I have never been angry at Kristi Noem. Except, of course, she went through a moment where she refused to sign legislation that would protect women in sports. And she made the argument that the legislation wasn't accurate and would make it create too many lawsuits. So she didn't want to go forward with it. And then she worked with her, I'll call it General Assembly. I don't know what they do there in South Dakota. And they were able to work something out. And it seemed to me that she was not on the up and up on that. Like, she had tried to play that a little politically, and it kind of blew up on her. And I said, look, they got it right in the end. I'm going to leave it be. And then she was doing these, I'm going to call them commercials, for some dental group or some dental product. It's like, what is the governor doing here? I mean, if the governor wants to have a side business selling Amway, I guess you're more than welcome to do that. But you're doing commercials for it? You're the governor. We don't do that here. What is this? But now you write the book, and you got a yappy little dog, and you're like, this dog is untrainable. Here, let me take it out to a gravel pit and shoot it. Oh, yeah, you're not going to be vice president that way. You're not going to be vice president that way. Just so we all understand. And she's doing more and more interviews. And then there's a whole conversation about Commander, which is Joe Biden's dog. In an interview that was on Face the Nation, according to this, Kristi Noem, in her book, wrote that one of her first priorities, if she were at the White House, would be to make sure the commander, who's Biden's German Shepherd, was nowhere on the grounds, and that commander should say hello to Cricket. Cricket was her dog that she shot. Commander's the dog that bites everybody and is no longer there. You want less of that? No. I want people who have lost their minds to lay it all out on the table so when we dismiss them for good. Kristi Noem has seemingly served South Dakota well, but is also a little bit of a goof. And when I say a little bit of a goof, I mean she's a total goof. It's weird. It's weird. We think that, you know, people are normal and just do the right things. We forget that none of us fit that bill. In your world, there are only two people who are perfect, yourself and Jesus. Everybody else has got itself a flaw. And if you're honest with yourself, you're like, you got a flaw too. But there is no perfection. People have nuttiness about them. It's like watching actors. There was a video that went through my Facebook feed the other day. And it was of, they do have these roundtables with certain actors talking about either, you know, trials and tribulations or things in the industry, things that move them, how they prepare. And they were asking this group of people, why do you act? And some people are like, because I really have no other skills, right? And that's, you know, that is the way certainly I feel about radio. I don't know what else I would be doing. I really don't. But they get to Jim Carrey. Now, never mind his politics during the days of Trump, and he seemed like a pretty broken guy to me, but that's what he discusses. He discusses that he acts because he's broken. And the acting allows him maybe to put some of that together. I find the expression meaningful and meaningless all at the same time. Broken is a way of saying, I think it's a way of saying exhausted. I think for other people, it's a way of saying, what is the point of all of this? Why am I here? It's like a meaning of life kind of question. But it gets used as this crutch, as a look at me. I'm broken. I'm diseased. I'm ripped apart. I put forth to you that in a lifetime, at any one time, someone can be broken and by that afternoon be totally fine. One does not become an actor because they are broken. No one ever says one became a welder because they are broken. You mean if you're healthy, you get into welding, but if you're unhealthy, you get into acting? Well, what if there is some truth to that? What if there is an idea that people do certain things because of other things in them? For what reason would you want to be so in the public eye? It's like the people who run for political office. Why would you want this? For your family, why would you put yourself through it? Exactly how big is your ego? Did it ever dawn on anybody that their ego is exactly that big and therefore this is necessary? And so they run because this is what they have to do. It's like the idea of people who actually go physically running. Right? Do you know why people run? Why runners run? Because they have to. Because physically they have to move. They have to do the thing. It is inside of them and they have to get it out. Why does the actor act? Maybe like any artist, it's because indeed they are broken and they're trying to make sense of the world. I don't know if that means that the person who is a welder is somehow a more well-adjusted person. It might mean that they aren't given the audiences or the latitude to have levels of break. We see people in this Hollywood world lose their minds and lose their face. And we say, what's wrong with you? But we have plenty of people in our everyday lives lose their mind and lose their face. You know what they don't have? An audience watching it. They've got like a sister and an uncle watching it saying, would they just shut up already and just eat dinner? We get it. You're gluten-free. You don't have to tell us about all your bowel issues for the love of God. Oh, please save us the whole ethical treatment of animal nonsense. I'm having a steak. Leave me alone. Enjoy your kale, whatever it is. I think that's the difference. The level of freak out or the level of broken might very well be in proportion to the level of opportunity to share that brokenness or really the amount of money you have to be able to indulge it. Plenty of people out there who work as welders or work in factories or work in all sorts of 9-to-5 jobs. Man, they've got their own issues. You know what they don't have? The luxury of wallowing in it. Now, that's different than the Kristi Noem thing, right? Kristi Noem is just ridiculous. The dog was hard, so you shot it. Okay. And even if you were to argue that's not crazy, whoo, you put it in a book. You didn't decide, you know what? I'm going to keep that story just for me. It's going to be our little secret. You and me secret. My precious. No one will ever know our secret. We'll always be together.
my precious. No, you decided to put pen to paper, and then an editor looked at you and said, this? And you were like, uh-huh. And the editor said, we're going to sell copies, bitches. And then, boom, off to the printer before you had a chance to say, on second thought, too late, we're already on the third run. So there's a difference in that. Some people are just dopey. They don't actually see the issue with the thing. I don't think that Kristi Noem is necessarily broken. But the idea of broken amongst artists, and I would put actors in that category, is this idea that somehow they, more than you, have emotions, feel emotions, understand emotions. Nah. They, more than you, have the luxury of being able to live it, share it, indulge it, and never getting past it, or taking their time and getting past it. Now, it's possible that in some cases they've got more stresses, more responsibilities, but what are really the odds of that? Your responsibilities are any less real? More people are depending on them, maybe, in terms of workforce, but your family depending on you, that's stress enough. One kid, two kids, five kids, whatever the case may be. I don't think people go into acting because they are broken, although I do think that there's something very interesting to the idea of why performers perform and what it is that they are trying to fulfill in themselves. I have been to a handful of concerts in my life. And the answer is, why don't I go to concerts? Why didn't as a kid? As a kid or a young man? Because I never wanted to watch somebody else on stage. I want to be the guy on stage. That is the difference. Anytime I hear somebody speak, the question in my head, even if they're interesting, is why aren't I speaking? And you say to me, Tony, that's weird. It's part of how I see things and how I view things and how I want to engage it. I think this is true for us all in different ways. Why do runners run is the question. So, for example, you guys know I do a show on cigars and bourbon. Every week I review bourbon, Eat, Drink, Smoke, eatdrinksmokeshow.com. And every week I leave behind the bourbon. Every week, I love the sip of a bourbon. I love the sip of a rye. I love exploring what it is that's trying to offer, what it is the distillers were going for, what it is the wood had to offer, what that rickhouse was doing. And then I put it down. I'm done. Why do people drink? Because whatever it is in them, they need to drink. And so therefore, there are people who have issues within. They have to fight against that issue. Are they broken? This is their thing. You know, it goes to the argument I've made for years. Everybody has a fetish. Everybody has a fetish. And they've got a thing, and some of them are healthy, and some of them are not, and some of them are legal, and some of them are not. But the idea of being broken, I think, is a real problem. Because if you indulge that, then you're never getting past that. If you're not getting past that, where is your growth? Where's your better life? Where's your happiness? Kristi Noem, someone just wrote me, someone has never seen Old Yeller. I think the key word there regarding Kristi Noem is old. Just put it out there maybe as a counter argument. Kristi Noem, I don't see as broken. Kristi Noem just doesn't understand that, man, that's messed up. And no matter how much you want to rationalize it, the people have spoken, and you will never be vice president. As for Jim Carrey, he might be broken. But that might be something you want to work on and get past. But if you've got the money just to not, well then, okay, that can't be a good life, though. My one man's take. I'm Tony Katz.
very happy to see MIT do away with DEI. Now, it's funny, they haven't done away with the insanity of protest. They haven't done away with the bigotry towards certain students who may or may not be Jewish. But they've decided to get rid of diversity, equity, and inclusion statements in the hiring process because, in their words, they don't work. Well, there it is. I mean, we told you this, but glad you figured it out. Getting rid of the statement. So you no longer have to, like, write a fealty statement in order to get a job. DEI divides. DEI destroys the mind. DEI is bigotry. The more places that see this, the better. The better. MIT has got its own issues, don't get me wrong, as I said. But we'll cover more of that. I'll get to it. Meanwhile, NBA playoffs, bunch of controversy last night in that Knicks-Pacers game. I'll get to it. This is Tony Katz Today.